My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
For the first time on my UK column show, Max Egan, thank you for joining me in the trenches.
It's a pleasure to be here, brother. It's a long time since we had a chat. It's good to see you again.
So you and I struggled to get this recording done because initially you were actually at an Acapulco.
I was at an Acapulco, and we had a whole bunch of drama happen there with the whole staged cartel attack and all that sort of stuff that happened in Puerto Vallarta. And then we've had all these electrical powers and issues the last week. So, yeah, it's been difficult, but here we are, and hopefully the power will stay on, the electricity will stay on. Seems to be an ongoing problem I have in Mexico, electricity, no matter where I am.
I can relate. I'm in Africa. What was the drama you had?
The drama at Acapulco, in Acapulco, was in Puerto Vallarta this year. We moved from Acapulco to Puerto Vallarta. They moved a conference there. And the day after the conference, there was a huge apparent cartel attack. There was a cartel leader who was arrested and taken off and, I believe, killed. And so the cartel responded by setting fire to a lot of vehicles all over Mexico. Puerto Vallarta looked like a war zone, and it was being portrayed that way. What it really was they strategically parked a bunch of buses and cars around town and set them on fire. Took over a few vehicles, threw a few people out of their vehicles, and just left their vehicles in the centre of the road and set them on fire. And so it looked like there was smoke burning all over the place. Like, it looked like the church was on fire. It looked like the supermarket was on fire. But really, it was just the car park out the front of the supermarket and out the front of the church. There were a few OXOs firebombed. The whole thing lasted about 6 hours, and there were no police to be seen anywhere. And then it was suddenly all over. And within 2 days, Mexico was back to normal. But it was portrayed as this huge cartel attack, and it happened the day after an Acapulco. We're all still there in town. A lot of fights were cancelled and that sort of stuff. So it was, you know, pretty dramatic, but really not so much at all. I mean, I was out there walking around with a camera and a selfie stick going, well, there's not really a lot going on. There's a lot of burning vehicles, but there's not a lot really going on. So, yeah, it was interesting.
Wherever you go, fire seems to follow.
Yeah, it seems to be crazy stuff happening wherever I go. It's remarkable. A lot of the time, I mean, I sidestep a lot of bad stuff, sidestep hurricanes and earthquakes and all sorts of things. I kind of arrive the day after or leave the day before or whatever. And it was interesting with this whole cartel thing. I mean, we had to drive back from... It's about a 7-hour drive from where we were in Puerto Vallarta back to the ranch here. We had to make a few detours because there were a few burning vehicles and stuff, but really it was all for show more than anything, you know. But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know, everywhere I go there seems to be some form of action.
In 2023, you and I recorded an episode about the Christchurch massacre. In the time between then and now, I was contacted by the New Zealand government. They demanded that I take down that recording. And I did not comply. And what they in turn did was ban my website across the country. On top of that, listen to this. Twitter, despite it being owned by Elon, suspended my account for sharing the link to that podcast episode. If the conversation that you had with me, Max, was false, why would the New Zealand government demand I take it down?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I tried to point out with Christchurch. It was what everyone was missing. Everyone was arguing over whether it was real or fake, and I was saying it doesn't matter. What matters is how it's going to be used, and what matters is what's revealed on the shooter's video. You know, they want you arguing over whether there was enough blood or whether there was enough shell casings or whether it was real or whether it's fake. What they don't want you doing is looking in your peripheral vision and noticing this guy in red running around, noticing the car, it was a Toyota Will VS, No, I can even remember the registration plate if you give me a minute. But that car leaving halfway through, there's a lot of stuff that happened on that video that they don't want you seeing, because what you see in the peripheral vision of that video, forget the shooter, forget about the bullets, forget about all that stuff, and look at what's going on around him. And you see that this was all staged, and they had their hand on it. Then there was even a news report where that same car that left the mosque halfway through the shooting was being waved through a police roadblock. I mean, there was so much evidence that this was an inside job. It was staged. He was a patsy. And it exposed the New Zealand government, the police and the media as being complicit in that event. And that's what I was trying to get out to the truth movement. But everyone just wanted to argue over whether it was real or fake. And they're saying, you're not addressing it as fake, so therefore you're a shill. It was incredible the amount of disinformation there was with that. That shooter's video was a gift. It showed us how these MK Ultra Manchurian candidate operations work. It showed us how all the colour coding and sound coordination works. And it showed us the extra players. They were caught with their hands in the cookie jar squarely with that shooter's video. And that's why they wanted the conversation removed. And that's why nobody would touch that information. Everyone kept arguing over whether it was real or whether it was fake, you know?
But isn't it also interesting that quote-unquote Free Speech X decided to work in conjunction with the New Zealand government?
Yeah, well, Free Speech X isn't about free speech at all. Well, they say freedom of speech but not freedom of reach. That's what he says, isn't it?
And they certainly do take down...
I mean, they banned me on X for a long time. Then they gave me my account back. They banned me four times. I'm on my fourth X account. You know, I've finally gotten back up to, I don't know, how many subscribers I got now, whether it's 10 or 20,000 or something now. I used to have like 60 or 70,000 subscribers, but they deleted that account. But they blocked me for 7 days the other day because there was a post by Laura Loomer saying that she expects that there will be a terror attack staged on the United States that will be 10 times bigger than 9/11, and that she just has this feeling that the person who carries out the attack, when they trace him back, they'll find that he was influenced by right-wing media, the alt-right media. You know, people like me, or I would suggest she's trying to point the finger at Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens and people like that. So, and I commented on that, and I said, yes, well, in other words, Israel is going to stage another false flag terror attack in the United States, and they're going to blame the alternate media and say that we're all terrorists. And I said, they do this because Judaism is a death cult, and they kind of feel depressed when they're not killing Goyim. And I got banned for 7 days for saying that. You know, so... that's the way it goes, yeah. Yeah, it's all the one big club. But I think even a lot of the visible club, I think, are being played as much as everybody else through everything that's happening at the moment. I mean, there's the big club that we know they're all part of, you know, the Epstein club and, you know, Trump and BB and all this crew that do all this terrible stuff that look like they're controlling the world. And they're all paid billions of dollars and stuff. Well, the money doesn't mean anything. The money is there so they can have all their lavish lifestyles and harvest children and do all the shit they do. But the world isn't run in order to make money. It's run in order to harvest people. And a lot of the guys in the big club that we call the big club, like Trump and everybody who started this whole conflict with Iran, are being played as much as everybody else because they don't realise there's actually a bigger club above that, which contains just a handful of people who are manipulating the whole game. And everything that's going on, I mean, I think Trump was kind of, sure, he wanted to start a war. He thought he was going to be the golden boy. He thought he was going to be the new Goyim Moshiach that was going to help usher in the Jewish Messiah. And I think Bibi thought they were going to get their third temple and they were going to get greater Israel and all that sort of stuff. But I don't think it's going to go down that way. I think all hopes for greater Israel have pretty much been destroyed in this war and will continue to be destroyed. And I think that all of these guys are realising now that they've been played and that there's a much, much higher agenda here to basically depopulate everything. The whole Israel and Greater Israel, and you're going to get your third temple and all this stuff has all been a play. Everyone's been played through the whole thing. And I think we're in incredibly interesting times, brother. We really are.
That's a very interesting take, Max. I don't think I've heard anyone yet say that the Greater Israel Project is not going to go ahead. Why do you say that?
I think what they've done in Iran... Even if the head of Iran was a player, and I think it's just a big people farm and they're all players, but the way the United States conducts war, they just go in and they wipe out the military, they wipe out the leadership, and then they say, well, we've won. We've destroyed your Navy, we've destroyed your Air Force, we've killed your leadership, so we've won. But that's World War II thinking. Now you've got asymmetric warfare. When they did that with Libya. They did that with Saddam Hussein. They did it with Syria. They've done it everywhere. That's the way they operate. But they did that with Iran as well. They went in and they bombed the presidential palace, which is a beautiful ancient building, like a World Heritage Site, incredibly, like a work of art, this place that they destroyed to kill Khomeini. And interestingly, he didn't go and hide in a bunker or anything. He knew they were after him, but he still stayed home in the palace. So they destroyed that, and then they bombed that school. And the reason they bombed that school, all those children, was because that was where most of the generals and heads of command of Iran sent their children to that school. And when all of the parents came to that school after their children had been bombed, then they bombed them again, because they wanted to take out the generals and stuff. So they double-tapped it, like they hit it again 40 minutes later. So all premeditated. So they took out all of that infrastructure. They took out visible missile silos. They took out their very small Navy, because they have a very small Navy, Iran. And their air fighters, most of their air fighters, and said, OK, well, we've won the war. But Iran has been is prepared this what is called a mosaic defence system, whereby if war breaks out, there are 31 different command centres, 31 different provinces in Iran, and each one operates independently. If war breaks out, then they open a sealed envelope that has predetermined instructions in it, and that's what they do. They follow those instructions until they're told to stop by central command, which is the Ayatollah. Well, they killed the Ayatollah in the first strike, so they killed the off switch. When they took out the Ayatollah, they turned on this whole 31 centres, these military centres. Like, there is no head of command. You can't... When Trump says he's negotiating with Iran to have a ceasefire, well, who are you negotiating with? Because you took out the leader. Doesn't matter if you're talking to the foreign minister. The foreign minister isn't the leader. He doesn't control the off switch. You turned this system on, and it's called a dead hand defence system. So, I mean, they've got bunkers that are 500 metres below ground in 20 metres of concrete. They've used about 5% of their missiles so far. And they can make about 400 drones a week just with the production facilities that they've got now underground. All these centres are 500 metres underground. They've got a whole tunnel system in 31 different provinces beneath Iraq. They've got trapdoors that open on the desert floor. They bring these mobile rocket launches in, they put them under a shaft, they open the trapdoor at the top and they fire a missile that comes directly out of the desert floor. There is no silo or anything like that. There's nothing to see to bomb. So these missiles go up, then the trapdoor closes and that's it. And you've got thousands of these all over Iran, and this is where they're firing their missiles from. These are 500 metres below ground. Even if you were to go and nuke Iran, if nukes are really a thing and they're really a threat, you could go and nuke Iran. These bunkers are 500 metres below ground in 20 feet of concrete, full of thousands of missiles, and they're all operating independently now. You've turned off the off switch. You killed the off switch. So they're going to keep firing, and their demands are that all US bases are closed in the region. They've got to leave. All US bases go away. They want regime change in Israel. They want you to stop attacking. They want a democracy where everybody's equal in Israel. They want $500 billion in compensation for the last 47 years of sanctions, and they want compensation for all damages done to Iran during the war. And that's their terms. If you don't give us this, then we're just going to keep firing, and that's the way it is, because that's what it says in the sealed instructions that were given to us 20 years ago. And they've been preparing for this war for 48 years. Doesn't matter if you destroyed their Navy. They've got thousands of speedboats with rocket launchers and 50 cal machine guns. They'll surround any vessel and do it with asymmetrically. They've got thousands of drones. You can take out a $3 billion aircraft carrier with a few, you know, $200 drones. So, you know, it's a completely different style of warfare to what the United States was thinking. And this system has been switched on now. And they're just, there were 84 waves of missiles in Tel Aviv. You know, people fleeing Tel Aviv. They're just, it's relentless. They're not getting any video footage out. We're hearing that, oh, only a few people have been killed. No, look, they've taken out between 10 and 13 US bases already in the Persian Gulf. They're saying if you put boots on the ground, then we're going to take over both sides of the Persian Gulf. We're going to take over Bahrain, Qatar, all of it. And that's what we're doing. You had, what's her name? Carolyn Leavitt out there yesterday or the day before, a few days ago, saying, look, we've already won. If there's any more violence, it's because Iran don't understand, the Iranians don't understand they've been defeated. Well, hang on. If they've been defeated, how come they're still sending barrages of missiles over? So this is like, it's like you've turned on a volcano and you don't know how to turn it off. They should never have taken over out the leader. If the leader was a player and this is one big people farm, well, they needed that guy to say, hey, stop firing, we need to negotiate. Because at the moment, there's no negotiations, and the Iranians are just going to keep going until Israel's gone. All US bases are gone. They want to control the Straits of Hormuz. The world has changed. The supply chain is completely broken down. See, the people who built Israel and put Israel there, put it there to create this very situation, this huge conflict of East against West. And they want to depopulate the world. We know that. Well, what's the best way to depopulate the world? International codependency, which is something I talked about in my very first film in 2008, The Big Picture. I said international codependency, moving us all into cities. We're being set up for a fall. Everyone lives off food trucks. All they have to do is shut down the supply chain and they depopulate most of the world, most of the world. So you get these Jews and all these people thinking they're going to have Israel. They're going to have their state of Israel. They're going to be able to do all this stuff. They're smaller players. The club that you can see, the big club, the pedophile club, the Epstein club, these are people you can see. So that's not the real players. They are all being played as much as everybody else, and they don't even know it. Behind this, you've got like the Rothschilds and the people who actually run the farm, which is a very, very small group of people. Who we would, you know, it seems logical that these people repopulate the world every so often. They depopulate the world and then repopulate the world, and we are in one of these times. And this is how they're going to do it. They're going to do it through famine. And you're going to have most of the cities just completely collapse soon. The whole US system's going to collapse. The whole democratic system's going to collapse. The world as we know it is going to collapse. And you're not going to get greater Israel out of that. You might get control, but it's not going to be anything that we thought it looked like. I think everybody's been played through this. I think Trump really thought he was going to be the golden boy. I think Bibi Netanyahu thought he was going to get greater Israel. No, it's just going to be mass depopulation. Shut down most of the supply chain. The countries that will come out probably best out of all of this will be countries like China and Russia. But the West is mostly going to be gone through this, and it's been set up to be that way.
So what do you think was the plan?
Well, I think Trump thought he was going to be the golden boy. I thought that he, you know, he did that whole ceremony thing where he pierced his ear and, you know, that whole fake assassination bullshit. He's already been named as the guy who's going to usher in the Jewish Messiah. They got the coin with Cyrus and Trump and Balfour on it. I think they thought that was going to happen. And if there was leadership in Iran that could turn the off switch on the missile attacks, maybe that could happen. Maybe it could have gone down that way. They've already taken over a lot of Ukraine. Maybe they'll all move there. But I think the big thing that's going to come out of this is the complete destruction of Western civilization. And I think Asia is going to suffer a lot through this as well because of the breakdown of trade. It's going to depopulate a lot of people, and it's going to get rid of the West because the West is dependent on this whole international codependent system that's been set up. And most Westerners have lost most of their life skills. At least in China, a lot of people, you've got people who can still do pretty amazing things, you know, amazing herbal medicines, and they've got a lot of those natural skills. We don't have any of that left much in the West. So when civilization breaks down and people can't go to the supermarket and they can't just get gasoline, Western cities are going to be places that you don't really want to be. And I can't see... I can't see the world staying anywhere near what it is in the future that's unfolding. People don't know the extent. I mean, if this continues, I mean, if it doesn't stop and these the Straits of Hormuz are not opened, well, you're going to see a loss of fuel. You're going to see a loss of fertilizer. Even now, the fertilizers and stuff is not getting through. So they can't plant crops for next year. So the world's got maybe 3 or 4 months' worth of stored food until next season, you know. A lot of this stuff isn't going to happen next year. So over the next 12 months, you're going to see a complete breakdown. The United States is not going to recover from this. They're going to lose their place as the world reserve currency. Like before the war, the United States was the world reserve currency. They had 13 bases in the Middle East. They were controlling the flow of oil. They had the petrodollar, which is what actually keeps the United States afloat because of what... $39 trillion or however many trillion dollars in debt. I don't even know what the figure is anymore. It's just astronomical, unimaginable amount of debt that can never be paid. The only thing that kept it afloat was the petrodollar. And it had all that before the war. And now, and Iran was under sanctions. Now all the sanctions are gone. Iran can trade its oil, and it's now in control of the Straits of Hormuz. So it's already the winner in this war, even if it was to stop today. But it's all payment going through the Straits now. It wants to put a toll on the Straits, and it will only take payment in Chinese yuan. It won't accept US dollars, and it won't allow anybody who's an ally of the United States to have any trade go through those Straits. You've got the Houthis about to take over the Red Sea in the Gulf of Aden, which is the Straits of Ali Mudab or something like that. So they're going to take over that as well. This is going to control a lot of world trade. And, you know, it's fertilizers, it's electronic parts. I mean, you've got most computers and things have electronic parts that come from Malaysia that they need chemicals that come from the Middle East to make these computer parts. So it's everything. And the trade drop-off is just, it's stopped. It's just gone. And you're going to see, I think there's like 2 or 3 weeks' worth of gasoline left in Australia, massive gasoline shortages in England. What they've done through COVID, they blew up a lot of the food factories. You had light aircraft flying into chicken farms and all sorts of crazy shit through COVID. They did everything they can to break down food production. They've shifted all industry away from all of our countries, so everybody's internationally codependent. All they have to do is break down the supply chain and they depopulate most of the earth. And then it's whatever comes after that. Well, is it going to be Greater Israel? Well, I don't think so, because I don't think they counted on the asymmetric mosaic defense system of Russia, the dead hand system. I mean, not Russia, of Iran. They've got in place. And like I said, it's literally called dead hand. I think Russia's got the same sort of system in place. But you could carpet bomb every inch of Iran and these missiles are not going to stop firing. They're all underground. You don't know where any of the bases are. There's nothing to reveal where they are. And you're just going to keep firing until Israel doesn't exist anymore. And there's no US bases there. They now control both sides of the strait, or they will soon. You know, and even in the Middle East, all you've got to do is take out the desalination plants, and there is no Middle East. There is no Dubai. There is no Qatar. There is no Bahrain. You know, all of these places exist because of the desalination plants they've got. All you do is bomb all that. So, you know, the world is changing. And like I said, even if Iran was a player, well, sure, I can understand that. They'd be part of the big club, not the big, big club, but the big club. But the 31 military commanders are not. They're just military commanders who believe that they're fighting, you know, for their country. They're fighting for their very existence of the Persian people. And they've got these sealed instructions that were given to them in the event of this very situation. And they're just following these instructions. They're not letting up until their demands are met. I think that's a wild card they never counted on. But then I think the guys who actually puppet the strings and who actually set up Israel, which was the Rothschilds and whoever they're working with, I think they foresaw all this. I mean, how do you get people to willingly destroy the world for you? Because when you look at all the Kabbalistic Jews and the destruction of Amalek, and a lot of these people believe that the earth itself was created by God as the embodiment of evil itself. So everything on earth is evil. The only way the universe or creation can be cleansed of evil is for the earth and all life on it to be destroyed. That's what they believe. So how do you get people like Trump and Bibi Netanyahu and these smaller players, Putin and the Iranians and any of these people, to actually participate in something that's going to destroy the world? What do they get out of that? Or just like explosions or something? What do you get out of it? You know, you've got to trick these people into doing it. So I think with this war, what they've done in Iran, they've kind of been tricked into kind of clicking this dead hand system, which is going to depopulate most of the Western world. And that's how it's going to work, by shutting down the trade. But again, I think it's all been done. It's all been set up. All the dominoes over the last 150 years or so have all been put in place. So you just go bang, and that's what Israel was created to do. That's why it was put in the middle of the Middle East. That's why it's been niggling and fighting and poking the bear for the last 48 years. And now Iran is responding, and that's exactly what they wanted Iran to do.
You mentioned COVID. It's almost a distant memory now. People don't even remember it. They don't remember being locked down. They don't remember the vaccines.
Well, yeah, they're going to go through that again, though. You're going to go through lockdowns with this as well. The difference is that back in the COVID days, you could not comply and get away with it. But this time, you're not really going to have a choice, because it's going to be energy lockdowns, and you're simply not going to have the fuel, and it's not going to be a choice of compliance. It's going to be a choice of supply. You're simply not going to have access to the gasoline. You're not going to have access to the shops and the food. And it's a whole different ballgame what we're going into. This is the biggest event of our lifetime, brother. It really is. This is the biggest event in modern recorded history. Even if it was to go back, if it was to stop today, the damage to the supply chain, the fact that none of the fertilizers have got through, it's almost getting too late to plant the crops now. This is a life-changing event. The breakdown in the supply chain, this will take, and the fact that the US has lost all these bases, this will take decades upon decades to recover from this situation just as it stands now. So it has the potential to be absolutely life-changing for everybody.
What do you think is the desirable outcome for people like us?
Ride the wave through to the other side. I mean, you could end up in a Mad Max type reality, brother, and I'm not joking, you really could. I've often said the only way, really, I mean, there's no way to fix this system. This system has to collapse. It has to crash and burn and see what comes out the other side. And I think the pedivores who run the world know this as well. And this has been done deliberately, because they've been found out. And they're prepared to rule over the ashes of the world rather than have anybody left alive. All the pedivores, this is how they kept the big club active in doing what they were doing. Get them involved in all of this cannibalistic Epstein stuff that's all come out, which I think has come out deliberately, because this actually motivates people like the Iranians to want to kill the West, you see, because they're even labelling the West, you know, the pedophile class, the pedophile elite, the Epstein block, you know. Every animation video, every news interview that you see with any Iranian official discussing the war with Israel and America always brings up Epstein. They always bring up the Epstein class. That's what they call them. That's who they're fighting against. So I think this motivates them into wanting to just kill and destroy everything in the West, which is what the ruling hand wants anyway. Now, I think all this Epstein stuff, I mean, that's how you keep them in tow. You let them do the most heinous things. And that's what power is to a lot of people in this big club. But above that, there's this whole, I don't know, this recycling mechanism that happens. Whoever's behind that, I mean, I suggest whatever's going on in all of the deep underground bases and things like this, I mean, that's where I think the controlling hand would be. And it sounds kind of really conspiratorial once you start getting into stuff like that. But I think that pretty well everybody's been played here. People who thought they were in the big club didn't realise there was a bigger club. And they didn't realise just how much they were being played as well and how expendable they all are. I mean, it doesn't matter. Trump, billionaire, Bibi Netanyahu, it doesn't matter. Dershowitz, all these people who are billionaires, it doesn't matter. They're all expendable. Money isn't there to... I mean, it's there as an appeasement for these elites to get away with what they do. But money, the real purpose of money is to keep little people like you and me in scarcity, in shortage. And, you know, they give it in abundance to their slaves and they give them all the children they want to harvest and whatever. But I think there's a higher play behind the whole thing. And I think that they're all going to be thrown to the wolves with everybody else. There are no real winners in this, except for those who are working towards the depopulation of this earth.
What you're saying sounds very black-pilled and dark.
Well, it depends on how much you believe the system is real. I mean, like, I'd like to be in a little cabin somewhere with a little creek flowing beside me, living on top of a cliff, just watching the whole shit show from a distance. You know, have a bow and arrow and have, like, nobody know I'm there and I can hunt and fish and do what I do. I think human consciousness has reached a point where we've brought this on ourselves and those who are meant to survive and get through this will get through it. Those who still have life skills, those who still see this as being the ride that it is and the necessary cleansing that had to happen because of our failure to pay attention for the last couple of hundred years. I mean, all the stuff that our governments have gotten away with, even the whole Epstein class that is being fought here. You know, any person that has really succumbed to government, when you know the government is corrupt, why do we do this? I mean, I never did. Through my whole life, I became a musician, lived on the outside of society. I just never complied with any of it. I've complied with enough of it for them to just kind of leave me alone. Like, I'll get a driver's license and I'll put plates on my car because I don't want to have to get pulled over all the time. I'll get a passport so I've got freedom of travel. But if I can work and operate outside the system and not pay taxes, well, I'm going to do that. I'm not going to support them in any way. I'll just have enough of their stuff with me to be able to navigate through their system with a minimum of hassle. But never comply with it, never feed it, never have anything to do with it, you know. It's our unwillingness to call a spade, which has caused this whole situation. I mean, we know our politicians are corrupt. I mean, everyone, you could talk back in the 60s, my parents would be talking about how all the politicians lie. And I'd think, well, if they're liars, why the fuck are you letting them rule you? Why are they still in office when you know they're liars and you just accept this? It's like when the media, there'll be something that happens with some politician rapes a teenager and I'll say it's a scandal. No, it isn't. It's a crime. If you did it or I did it, it would be a crime and we go to jail. But they do it. It's a scandal. You know, so, and we accept this. And now all this Epstein stuff has come out. Why hasn't there been a revolution? Your politicians torture, rape, and cannibalize children. Okay? This is who runs your government. And you're doing all this stuff. You're complying by their wishes and you think their law is real and you're going to join their military and you're going to go and fight people in another country you've never met before because they tell you to. They eat children, for God's sake. You know, what happened to the human race? What happened to the men? We would have tarred and feathered these people and run them out of town 100 years ago. So when you look at all this, I mean, who's to blame for this situation? And who gets through this? Well, who gets through it is those that are in touch with themselves, those that can see this for what it is and are prepared to ride the wave and realise that there's nothing good about this system really at all. You know, I'd much prefer to be just living in the forest somewhere and fishing and hunting and growing my own food and having children and doing that sort of stuff, you know, rather than living in a city and working and doing a job I hate and breathing gasoline fumes and all that sort of shit. I mean, you know, humanity's completely lost its way. So where is the safe place? Well, the safe place is in your heart, knowing and believing in yourself. Like I've said, you've got to, with what's coming, you've got to find the way of walking the path of the warrior, which is to face infinity without flinching. You've got to be able to face, this is the knack of being able to face with serenity, odds and circumstances that were not included in your calculations, and simply be able to step onto that path and go with that new reality and come out the other side. That is the path of the warrior. Don't get into a battle that you know you will lose just because you want to prove that you're brave. You're not being brave. You're being freaking stupid, okay? You've got to be able to face infinity without flinching. The world could change at any moment, and there is an infinite amount of possibilities of what it could change into. And you've got to be prepared for every one of them, no matter what they are, with serenity, and simply walk on that path now. Face infinity without flinching. That's how to get through. And that's what this is, brother.
Yeah, that question you asked now, where are the men? That is such a pivotal question. It never gets asked in the alternative media space, never.
I've been asking it quite frequently lately, you know? Yeah, I mean, we would have stood up, we would have protected our women and children. For God's sake, we know how criminal these people are. Why on earth is anyone doing what their government tells them to do?
Because, Max, what is a man? What is a woman? We don't know anymore.
Yeah, of course. I forgot about that. Thank you for the bringing me back to reality. Yeah. That's insane. That's insane. Like, all these people saying, well, identify as a woman. Well, what is a woman? You don't even know what that is. How do you know what it is you're identifying with? You know, none of it makes any sense. It's a complete mindfuck, the whole thing. But, yeah.
There are a lot of males around us, but there are very few men.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean, they think you've got to be, like, built like Arnold Schwarzenegger and you've got to be, like, you know, you've got to be, like, you know, Captain America or something to be a man. No, you don't. You just got to simply be in integrity and be prepared to speak your mind, call a spade a spade. And be honest, be in integrity. That's what it means to be a man. Be a protector for your children. Be a protector for your future. You know, that's what it takes to be a man. You know, and don't take a backward step to bad behaviour. I mean, we step outside our moral compass every day in order to comply with legislation that we know is wrong. What's manly about that? You might go to the gym every day and you might look like Brad Pitt or whatever, but hey, you know, complying and bending over backwards to a criminal is not being a man. You know, these politicians simply need to be bitch slapped and put on a boat and sent to an island somewhere. I've said, like, I'd like to see everybody in the United States. Actually, I'd like to see everybody who owns a gun armed, go to the White House armed and say, hey, you guys, you're out. We're not going to shoot anybody, but hey, look, we're ready. We've got our guns here. We're ready. If you want to start shit, we're ready. Because it says in our constitution that we have the right to do this, and you guys have seriously fucked up. So we've got a plane here for you. We'll get all you politicians who all work for Israel. So we'll put you all on this plane. We're going to send you to occupied Palestine, and you can stand with the Israelis and you can fight alongside them. We're taking our country back now, and we're going to stop all these wars and stop all this shit. We're not going to comply with the dictates of a bunch of people who kill, rape, torture and eat children. Okay, so come out here, get in the plane and fuck off. That's what needs to happen.
I was at a friend's house a few days ago and this guy came up to me. Never met him before, but he follows my work. And we got chatting about all kinds of things. And he asks me, how much of the Epstein thing do I think is actually real? And Max, I don't know the answer.
I think it's all real, but I think Epstein was a gopher, though.
Yeah, sorry. He first asked me, do I think Epstein actually existed?
Do I think, yeah, well, I think, yeah, he did. But how do you know about anything anymore? That's the thing, you know, with all this AI. How do you know any of it's real? Anything that's going on outside of these four walls, how do you know it's real? I mean, I was in Puerto Vallarta when they staged all that cartel stuff. It looked like a war zone. I actually put out a video and I said, Puerto Vallarta is a war zone. That was the name of the video. Because I went out there, like, this started in the morning and we heard all this was going on. And the first thought was, shit, I'm going out with a camera to check all this out, you know. And the person I was with is going, fuck, you're crazy, you know. But she came with me and she's kind of, you know, checking it out. And I'm looking at it, I'm going, well, I'm seeing a lot of burning vehicles, but there's not anything going on. It looks like a war zone, but it's not. But then there's a lot of bombs going off. There's a lot of people being killed. There's a lot of stuff going on. And I've got people on the ground in Gaza. I've got people on the ground in Israel that I speak to occasionally. I've got people on the ground in various places around the world. So I know there's stuff going on. But, yeah. I mean, the whole Epstein thing, yeah, I think this is true. I think this is what they do. But I don't think Epstein was really blackmailing people so much. He was a gopher. He was an organiser. He was just someone who organised the parties. He had a lot of contacts and connected a lot of people. But I think that, I mean, this is a people farm. That's the way I look at it. The amount of children that go missing every year, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I think all this ties in. But I think the disclosure of what Epstein was up to was timed very carefully. And I think it was deliberate. And like I said, he's been set up as a kingpin when he's really just a gopher. He was just an organizer. I think people like Donald Trump and Ellen DeGeneres and many of the other people were actually quite far above Epstein in the club. He was just an organizer of the parties and things. But, you know, they're all kind of, they're all involved. But like I said, I think there's a much, much higher club than that. But I think all this has been deliberate. I mean, this is why you're seeing Iran being so indignant and being so adamant in their wanting to destroy America because of how evil America it is. All these animation videos that it's putting out are saying, this is one vengeance for all. This is vengeance for the black slavery, which we know is run by Jews anyway, and black people as well. And they're saying vengeance, you know, for Malcolm X and vengeance for Vietnam and vengeance for Iraq and Afghanistan and for Rachel Corrie and for the Epstein kids and for the American Indians. And, you know, so they really see the United States as being this evil, evil thing, which is all running on the back of the Epstein files. This has exposed just how evil the system is. And, yeah, the system is that evil, and it was created to be that evil by these Kabbalistic Jews that have gotten in there and just perverted everybody's mind and pornography and all the shit they've done. And you know, even the star on the Jewish flag is the star of Rembrandt, the star of Moloch, child sacrifice. So this mentality has been put into the West, but it's been put in there for a reason so that the people in Iran would feel so irate about it, because we need to get all these people together so they'll kill each other off. That's what it's all about. And I don't think even the people that are playing it understand that they're being played. But I think the whole Epstein thing has been timed perfectly to create this situation. But it's also a test for human consciousness. Like, I mean, I've said to people that Gaza is a test for human consciousness for so many years. Palestine, the greatest moral dilemma in the world today. And if we are not able to look into our hearts and heal Palestine, then the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. I've been saying this for 20 years. And look what we're seeing now. Look what we're seeing come to all of our countries. It's turning into Gaza everywhere. And I've said, like, Gaza and Palestine and West Bank, it's a system of warehousing and surplusing human beings. And that's what our societies are being set up to do. So this whole situation we're seeing now, the Epstein class, I mean, they release all this information. Like I said, where's the riots? Everyone's known about this for like a year or 2 years. since Epstein was arrested. And the stuff that's come out in the last 12 months showing how connected Donald Trump is to all this sort of stuff, it mentioned 38,000 times in the Epstein files. We know that all the European aristocracy, all these people, we know that there were child trafficking stuff going on in Romania and Bulgaria and all through Europe and all these places, all connected to the United States, all connected to the same thing. Where's the uprising? Where's the uprising? This is a bit of a test for humanity as well, isn't it? Are you passing the exam? Have you spoken about Gaza for the last 60 years? Have you spoken about it during the last 2.5 years of genocide? Have you had anything to say about it all? Or you've been out there saying it's all fake and all rah, rah, rah. Now, children are dying every single day because your governments are doing it because you're not saying anything about it. So how pure is your heart? So in many ways, it's a soul test, this whole thing. And, you know, and they've tested all of humanity. Humanity, here it all is. You haven't risen up. Well, okay, now we'll do this with Iran and they'll rise up and they'll destroy everything for us. Then what are you going to do? You know, so everybody's been played through this, brother. Everybody has been played. But this whole set was put in motion about, you know, halfway through the 1800s, even before then. It was all set up to happen. This is exactly why Israel was created. And Israel isn't meant to survive. Even Kissinger said that in 10 years, Israel won't exist. He said that about maybe 12 or 13 years ago, so he's a little off in his timeline. But Israel wasn't put there to survive. The whole concept of greater Israel and God's chosen people created these zealous Zionists who would really push this agenda, thinking that that's what was going to be their reward. No, they've been played like everybody else. It was never about that. It was just about mass killing. That's what it was always about.
The biggest support for Zionism actually is evangelical Christianity.
Yeah. Mm. The Scofield Bible. This has all been done by design. The Scofield Bible is nothing like the original Bible. I don't buy into any religion, If Jesus existed, I mean, a lot of people call him Rabbi Jesus. But if he did exist, he was very likely the rebel priest that Barbara Thuring talks about in the Dead Sea Scrolls. He said, and even the whole term Jew, I mean, Jew was inserted by King James. You know, it's not even a real term. It was Yehudi, it was Judahite, it was Israelite. It was people who followed the teachings of the man Israel, the belief in one true God. If you believe there's one true God, you are Israel. If you didn't, then you were what was called a nation. And the word nation was converted to Gentile. And Israelite and Yehudi and Judahite and Judean was all converted to Jew by King James. So you changed that, ethnicized them. So suddenly the Israelites, who were people who believed in one true God, the Israelites were the people who chose God over the law of the state, the law of the nation. The other people were nations who chose the law of the government over the law of God. They flipped it. They created Jew and Gentile. So suddenly those people who chose God became God's chosen people, which was not. And the others are just the Gentiles. No, it was an Israelite or a nation. You either follow the law of God or you follow the law of the state. Even the cult term, the state of Israel, this is a contradiction in terms. You can't have a state of Israel. Israel was against the state. The only state of Israel is a state of mind saying that I am connected to God. That was what Israel was supposed to mean. So the whole thing's been a construct. And that's who created the Bible and Jesus and all that sort of shit. I think Jesus, if he existed, he was trying to point this out to people that, hey, fuck the state, fuck the church, fuck these people. All these people like the synagogue of Satan who are making you pay for baptism and making you believe you need the church and you need all this stuff so that you'll have a connection to the divine. No, you're already connected. Why do you believe any of this shit? Forget the state and just be one with God. That's what he was trying to say. And they've kind of inverted all that. That's if he even existed. But the whole religious book... And the creation of the word Jew and Gentile is where the real problem lies. And then you had the Scofield Bible come along and create the term Judeo-Christian. And if you look at Judeo-Christian, I mean, if Jesus was real and he did all the stuff that I just said that he did, he was actually going against the Judaism, so the Judaic people. They were selling religion, they were selling baptism, they were selling all this shit. And the Judeans, they believe, like the Yehudi, the Judahites, the whatever they call themselves today, the Jews, I guess, the people who practice Judaism, they think, they say Jesus is burning in a vat of boiling excrement of pigs and dogs and humans and all that shit, a big, big cauldron of burning shit in hell, boiling forever because of the, his crime against the Jewish people. And they don't say he's not the Saviour at all. They're waiting for their Saviour to be born now and anointed in the Third Temple before October 2nd, 2027. That anointing has got to be done by then. So that's one of the reasons they pushed this whole war with Iran, because they wanted to knock out Iran as a power so they can build their Third Temple. But like I said, I think that's all gone wrong for them. They didn't expect Israel to be utterly destroyed through the process as it is being. And but I think those who contrived the whole thing at the top did want Israel to be destroyed. The whole Third Temple, this was just a carrot there for the donkeys to lead them down the wrong path. But where were we going with all that?
It's funny to me, Max. You talk about Messiah. How Trump, how Trump has been positioned as that. Have you noticed?
Well, yeah, they say he is. He's the same as Cyrus of old, who was the guy who was supposed to have worked to usher in the Messiah as well. Like there was Balfour and Cyrus and now Trump. That's why the coin they minted has got Balfour, Cyrus, Trump on it, or Cyrus, Balfour, Trump, because that all led to the creation of the State of Israel. And Trump is the one who's supposed to create the war between East and West, which is going to deliver them the Temple Mount so they can build their Third Temple. And it's going to destroy Al-Aqsa Mosque and blah, blah, blah. They believe that this has to be completed by October the 7th, 2027, at the end of this particular Jewish calendar. That's the end date. He's got to be anointed before then. But they believe their Messiah is always alive. Like he is born in every generation, waiting for the right circumstances to be anointed, and they already have the temple, the Third Temple, all built and like prefabricated, ready to go up. I mean, there is talk that the Third Temple was already built back in the old days, and that this is they're rebuilding it and blah blah blah, and this is all the Antichrist and blah blah blah, you know. So that's the way the Christians look at it, but. Yeah, evangelical Christianism and the Scofield Bible and those evangelists out on TV saying we must support Israel because it says in the Bible you must support Israel. Well, what that means is that you must support belief in one true God. It's got nothing to do with a block of land, you know, but the whole Judeo-Christian concept is what makes people believe that it's this block of land. There's their fighting against these hordes of barbarians. No, it's not. It's there to create, it's like an ulcer, festering ulcer in the middle of the Muslim world, creating problems so that it can cry victim all the time. Even with Hamas, you know, Bibi Netanyahu was funding Hamas $35 million a month for the whole time. His plan was to make sure Hamas and Fatah never got together. And the rocket attacks that used to come from Hamas, I mean, these were water pipes that were powered by fertilizer that they would shoot over the wall that would send a pretty smoke trail in the sky. They would kill you if they landed on your head. They might put a hole in your roof or go through the back window of your car if they landed on you. If they landed on the road, they'd leave a nasty black mark. They didn't even damage the concrete. Oh, we're under rocket attack. Well, no, you're not. Now you're under rocket attack from Iran. That's what actual rockets look like. But these water pipes, these enabled Israel to cry victim all the time and say it's under rocket attack. If you had like a place, Gaza Strip, 25 miles long, 4.5 miles wide, it was constantly attacking Israel for the last 60 years, Israel could go and wipe it out in a day if there were seriously terrorists there. But whenever there was these rocket attacks, it gave them an excuse to go and test their new weapons on live targets. They also like keeping people alive and torturing them for years and years and years on end. They really get off on that sort of stuff. They got 10,000 Palestinians in jail at the moment that they torture every day. And it's horrendous what this state is. But, you know, it's an abomination, and Christians have unfortunately been taught to support it. Even their flag, like I mentioned earlier, there is no Star of David. If you are a Christian, go look in your Bible, see if you can find any reference to a Star of David. You won't. There is a Star of Remphan, the Star of Moloch, which represents child sacrifice, and that is what is on the Israeli flag. So they've got all of these Christians actually supporting Baal and child sacrifice, if you really want to get into ancient gods. And that's, again, what the Iranians view the West as. You're all Baal worshippers. You got this. You got Baal's star on the Israeli flag, and you're all supporting that. So what are we supposed to think of you people? You're like Sodom and Gomorrah that's taken over the entire earth. That's what they think of the whole thing, you know. But again, it's religion, isn't it? It's been, religion's always been the earth's leading cause of death. Fascinating stuff, really.
Do you think it's religion? Because that's like saying guns are a cause of death.
Every religion has a seed of supremacism at the core of it. Every religion will tell you, we've got it right. We're the one. You should tolerate the other religions, but you're the one who's got it right. That's supremacism. Jesus and all these great teachers, apparently, who existed through history, all told you you have a direct connection to the divine. You don't need a middleman to get in the way. Even when I was in Gaza, and I used to have talks to some of the Muslims when I was in there, and we would discuss religion, and you know, the taxi drivers, they'd be very interested because here's this Westerner guy, thinks he can talk about, you know, Muhammad and religion and shit. I want to hear what I had to say, you know. And I'm saying to them, we've all got a direct connection. We don't need any of this sort of stuff. And it's an electrical universe, it's an energetic universe, it's an emotional mirror and all this sort of stuff. And they're saying to me, well, they said, you're a Muslim, Max, you just don't realise it because all this stuff's in the Quran. I'm saying, well, okay, I don't see why that makes me a Muslim. And they say, well, have you read the Quran? I said, no. And they're saying, but all this stuff's in the Quran. I said, well, then why do I need to read the Quran? If I already know this stuff without reading the Quran, then why do I need to read the Quran? And well, because Muhammad wrote it. And I said, well, didn't Muhammad just sort of channel all this from God? And they said, yeah. And I said, well, then if I already know it without reading the Quran, how do you know I'm not just channeling it all from God? And why do I need to read the Quran? If I was to write it all down in a book, would you, and it was the same as what was written in the Quran, would you then take that to Muhammad and tell them that he needed to read Max's book? You know? And this is the sort of conversations I was having with them, you know? And so I don't think you need religion. I think even Christ said, you know, like if you think that I'm great, why do you see what you can do? You know, everybody has there's been great teachers, whether they're real or not, that have come through history that have all told you you've got a direct connection to the divine. In Lakesh, this is why I finish every radio show I do with In Lakesh. I am another yourself. We are all, each of us, simply a thought in the mind of God, whatever that is. That's the beautiful thing about God. It can be whatever you perceive it to be. To me, God is the energy itself, the conscious energy that makes up all creation. We are all simply different aspects of that. Why do I need a book to get in the way? Why do I need some book to tell me I've got to do this and do that and do that when all I'm really here to do is be the best I possibly can at me, at being me, being this expression of creation to the most fullness of its divine potential. And that's the best I can do. It isn't even being the best version of yourself. It's just being myself, finding out what I am and being that to the best of my potential, interacting with other people like you, which is simply another expression of me, looking at the world from your perspective. But ultimately, we come from the same energetic field. I don't need religion to get in the way of that. If I adopt a religion and I start believing this and this and this, well, hang on, you're reading a different book to me, and it says in this book that, hang on, like, you've got to tolerate that, but ultimately, if you don't believe in my book, well, ultimately, bottom line is you're evil. You're evil because this is the truth here in this book. And if you're not going to, I can argue about this my whole life, and if you're not going to eventually convert to this, well, it tells me in this book that I need to destroy evil, and you're evil. It says that in every single religious book. The bottom line, somewhere in the book, it will put that seed in your mind, whether it's Christian, whether it's Islam, whether it's whatever. So that's why I think religion is the leading cause of death. And it isn't a matter of saying the gun kills people. No, it isn't. It's the way people use the gun. It's the way people use religion. Why do you need that? If you believe in yourself and you believe in other people and you believe there is a divine and you're connected to it, well, why do I have to be connected to it according to what this guy says in his book? Fuck his book, you know?
It's divide and conquer is what you're saying.
Books, you know? You what?
Yeah, you're saying it's divide and conquer.
Exactly. That's what religion's for. And ultimately, it all tells you it's peaceful, but it all has a seed of supremacy at its core, every one of them. Otherwise, it wouldn't be different religions. It's just a different version of what they believe the divine creator is. Belief is the enemy of knowing, the enemy of knowledge. If you know that you're connected to something divine, why do you need a book to get in the way of that? If you want to understand that connection better, don't look at a book. Don't look at what someone else tells you. Listen to what your heart tells you. Meditate. Connect with it yourself. Listen to what it tells you.
I have to point out that there was almost a missed opportunity for a great one-liner there. I said divide and conquer, and it sounded like I said divine and conquer.
Well, yeah. Yeah. True. True.
Max, how can I follow your work?
Well, I'm banned most places. You can go to BitChute.com, and you can find The Crow House on BitChute. I'm on YouTube again. They've let me back on. I don't know how long for. They blocked my last video, and they've blocked about three or four of my videos since they let me back on. I think they put one strike against my channel. But you'll find me on YouTube, The Crow House. You'll find me at my website, thecrowhouse.com, which is still an old HTML-style website. Doesn't look that good on your cell phone, but it's the way it goes. You can thank me later. You've got to click the face to enter. It's actually got a splash screen. It's that old. So, yeah, you got to click the face to enter the site, and then it's all there. And you'll find, BitChute. You'll find me on Rumble, The Crow House. You'll find me on Odyssey, The Crow House. You'll find Max, The Crow House, on X. And I'm pretty well banned everywhere else, I think. I'm on Gab. I think Max Egan on Gab. I think I'm on LinkedIn as well, but I'm banned everywhere else. I'm banned, look, I'm never giving my Facebook back. Well, literally banned me on iHeart and iTunes and SoundCloud and Patreon and PayPal and Subscribestar and LinkedIn. They even banned me on LinkedIn. Crazy. Like everywhere. So, yeah, I'm kind
just
of
quickly,
hard to
Max,
find.
What's the story behind the name Crow House?
The Crow House? Well, nothing to do with what you would expect. I mean, crows became my totem. Crows kind of chose me as my totem. I didn't choose crows. When I was divorced, I used to play online games with my son. It was the only way we could actually hook up and play together. And we joined a game clan, and we used to play this game called Enemy Territory together. And he was Black Knight and I was Scarecrow, were our clan names. And I used to do a lot of art for the clan, and a lot of people just ended up calling me Crow, short for Scarecrow. And then I did a lot of art, and we used to have a lot of art displayed in the game arenas we used to play. And I ended up opening up a website so I could display all the art that I'd made online for it. And so it became The Crow House. And then I felt kind of guilty that I didn't have any truth on there. So I started posting stuff on there to inform some of the game players that actually the world isn't how you think. And then eventually I ended up deleting all the other stuff, and it just became this truth portal that it is now. And then crows started following me everywhere around the world, and crows have guided me on this path the whole way. Then I looked up crow medicine and crow magic and stuff, and I thought, whoa, this is freaky. This is kind of everything that I do. And it was interesting that crows sort of chose me as my totem. And all that kind of happened without me even thinking about it. And even with my name, Max Egan, which many people know isn't my real name, it isn't the name on the passport or anything. But when I was when my wife stole all my possessions and stuff, and all I had was my research, I kind of kept myself sane by writing a book that I published online for free. And I thought it would be good to use a pseudonym, because I was always fascinated by the silence do-good letters. If you look at the American Independence and Benedict Arnold and a lot of the people in the founding fathers and stuff, there were a bunch of letters that were sent to the New York Times by a guy called Silence Do-Good. And he was, there was a pseudonym, and I always kind of liked that. So I thought, oh, I'll use a pseudonym for my book, you know. So I used my middle name, Max, and I used my son's middle name, Egan, which is the original Irish spelling of the word Ian. And I just thought, oh, I'll use it just for fun, you know. And then a few years later, someone sent me a slideshow of article they'd done on the Bali bombing. And this is when I didn't even, like, YouTube had only been around for like a year or 2 years. And I thought it was a place high school kids uploaded their videos to and shit. I'd never really looked at YouTube, you know. And he sent me this YouTube presentation on the Bali bombing. And I looked at it and thought, wow, that's just a guy talking over a slideshow. I thought, I could do this. I got a lot of information to share. I could do this. So I made a film called The Big Picture. And I published that. And I thought, well, you could only upload 10 minutes at a time to YouTube at the time. So I thought, well, I'd like to make like a 90-minute film. So I uploaded like the first four parts, and it was part one of nine, part two of nine, part three of nine, part four of nine. And I uploaded it. I did all that and made it all in about a matter of a week or 2 weeks, and then got bored with it and just left it there. And I thought, oh, it'd be good to use the pseudonym that I used for the book. I'll use that for this slideshow. I didn't expect anyone would ever watch it. And so I used Max Egan, and I set it up with, made it look like a movie, because I'm pretty artistic, you know. And then I went back about a week after I'd uploaded it, and it had thousands of views. And I'm like, whoa, people are actually watching it. And all these people are commenting, going, it says part four of nine. Where's the other five parts? And I thought, shit, I better finish it. So suddenly, I became Max Egan. And then this guy, once I'd finished the whole film, and I used an AI voice because I thought no one's going to want to listen to this silly Australian accent. So I used the best quality AI voice I could find. And then the film got a few thousand views. And then someone uploaded a video of me speaking at a party, and I uploaded it to my channel. And people heard it and they said, oh, my God, Max, is that your voice? And I went, yeah. And they said, oh, you've got to redo The Big Picture using your voice. And I went, really? And they went, yeah. Yeah, people are going to want to hear it with your voice. But I've got a terrible voice, you know. And so I did it. And then suddenly this guy, American Voice Radio, contacted me and said, I want to interview you on my radio show because I've been trying to wake my neighbour up for 5 years and I haven't been able to do it. And I showed him your film and you woke him up. So I want you on there. And I went on and I did a radio show, and he said they loved your accent. Can you be on my regular Wednesday guest? And then they ended up offering me a show after a month. And then I had my own show on American Voice Radio for like 15 years. And that's how it all happened. And I was Max Egan suddenly. And I never planned on being this person with this pseudonym. But because I had that, well, I've been able to keep traveling all around the world and stuff because it's not my real name. And they, one of the things that when you enter the United States and stuff, they ask you for all your websites, and they want your Facebook profile and all that sort of shit. And I go, well, no, I have no online profile. And you look at my real name, and my real name has no online profile whatsoever. So I never set that up, but it's enabled me to be able to travel just kind of incognito and slip through the cracks in the system for my whole life. And I never planned on any of it, doing it that way. It's just weird how it all worked out. I never planned on crows. I never planned on the Crow House. I never planned on Max Egan. I never planned on being a radio host or doing public speaking or being an activist or, You know, and all my life I'd lived, I'd been a musician, I'd been on stage all my life, so I'm used to being on stage. I have no stage fright. You know, being in the Game Clan with my son, where I got the name Crow House, taught me video editing and Photoshop, and I developed all these skills through my life along the way, not knowing that they were all related. And then once I stepped onto this path of activism and doing these YouTube videos and stuff, suddenly I'm using every skill that I'd gathered in my life to do what I do now. And as soon as I stepped onto that path, my whole life has just worked like clockwork. And I've managed to slide between the cracks, and I've been doing this out and speaking out on radio now since 2008. And it's just worked out that way, and I never planned any of it. It's kind of crazy the way I look at it.